If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Mike Ray, former cop and body double for a world-famous action star, was ready to put show business behind him when he was asked to do one last favor for Hollywood's hottest new actress. All he had to do was find her the necklace from a forgotten film and not get killed in the process. From the insane house parties of Malibu and the reclusive mansions of Beverly Hills to the scorching California desert, Mike finds himself in a scandal involving one of the world's most eccentric billionaires, the Nevada Mafia, and a sadistic Estonian porn kingpin. To find the necklace, he'll have to blow the lid off a secret buried in the California desert that stretches back to ancient Egypt, with an irresistible client who won't take no for an answer. If the job doesn't get him killed, she just might. Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main has been described as a fast-paced love child of The Big Lebowski and Indiana Jones. Find out why readers have made this book one of the best reviewed in all of Amazon. It's Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main, available for only $2.99 on the Amazon Kindle store. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Boys and girls, welcome to an episode of... What is this? The three of us together after an eternity?
Yeah, man. Yeah, we felt like the two amigos who were wishing for a third amigo who was always busy on the night they wanted to hang out.
I have to travel at night.
It's a medical condition. I don't want to get into the details. By the way, you're O positive, right?
Yes. I'm Andrew Main. That's Mr. Brian Brushwood. You here? And there is Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Ah, oui.
So, it's Weird Things, the podcast. If I remember what we do on this, I think we talk about weird stuff. And
yeah. It's been a while. We got to kind of get back in the groove.
Yeah, well, no, it's been like 2 weeks.
The groove, because one of us was in a very, very weird place. And I'm not talking about when I went to Jody Maroney's in Venice Beach. I'm talking about Mr. Brian Brush. By the way, Venice Beach, on the way to the Venice Beach boardwalk, you pass the Venice Beach freak show. And there's actually not just the actual Venice Beach freak show. There is a literal freak show there. And I saw a guy sitting under the sign who had shaved his head, like bleached white hair, shaved his eyebrows, looked very, very pale, and was sitting under the sign dressed all in black in the middle of the sun looking very sad. And I wanted to take a photo because I thought it was hysterical, but then I thought, no, it's actually kind of sad. So I didn't do it on Twitter.
He's sad, Tor, the world's saddest man.
It was like the saddest freak under the freak show side. And I thought, no, yeah. I don't want
maybe
to disturb
like,
this.
Even freaks get broken up with, you know, I mean, we all need to pause to remember.
He just chose to sit under the sign. I'm like, wow, this is really appropriate. This is
exactly. No, there was a moment. Brian was
Indonesia.
Like, yeah, man. Like, I was a little bit nervous, especially after that story of everybody having a taste of the local weirdo. What is it? Everyone ate?
Yeah, the cannibalism.
Yeah, a little bit. Cannibalism made me a little bit nervous. Luckily, in Jakarta, we didn't see a lot of that. But, man, you do see a lot of weird things or culturally things that you are not accustomed to.
Tell us. We want stories, man.
Well, okay, so this is all for they're doing a magic special called Mahakariya Magician 2012. And they had me out.
Oh, yes. 2011 was really, they outdid themselves. Can't wait to see what they do for 2012.
Well, apparently they did. And this was their reunion special, so they had me back. And I had so much fun last time that this time, you know, it was instant. I was like, yes, of course, let's do this. Because a couple things you should know about Indonesia, they have 30,000 islands that make up the nation. So obviously you're not running cable to all those islands. And for many of the people who live on the islands, satellite would be too expensive. So this is an entire country that essentially watches television exactly the way we in America did 25, 30 years ago. Like,
and it's like 100 million people in Indonesia, right?
200 million people.
200 million.
200 million people, right? So it's, you know, more than half the size of the United States. And when they do a special, a live special, they have only 10 broadcast stations, and only three of them produce original content. All the rest, they license stuff, and they just repackage it and
like
maybe
overdub
it. Yeah, sure. They overdub everything. But they when they do live, they do honest-to-goodness live. Not live-to-tape, not 10-second delay live. Like, the feed is on, and 40 to 60 million people are watching you right now. Because when they do one of these specials... And magic is extraordinarily popular overseas. You know, they have a tradition of fakirs. And so when they do, like, they'll get 44% of the market share of everybody watching television is watching this special at that time, you know, which equates to, you know, depending on how many people watching, between 40 and 60 million people live.
Brian, did you get a context of, like, what it would be similar to in the United States? Like, what culturally this special, like, would it be like a Copperfield special, or would it be bigger, like the Oscars or something like that?
I think the presidential primary debates.
I mean, as far as the hard numbers, I guess it would be bigger than a Copperfield special. I didn't even pause to think about that. I mean, that's as far as hard numbers, they're getting close to what you would see from, essentially like the Super Bowl. I mean, the American Super Bowl, we're breaking records because we hit, 90 million last time, I think, was how many people watched the Super Bowl live. And at least to be in that ballpark, to put it in context, the highest rated cable nightly news program is strutting around like cock of the walk because they get 2 million views, 2 million viewers every night. And this is 20 times that number. So everywhere we go, anyway, once we do the show, everywhere we go afterwards, it's like I'm legit famous. People stop and, you know, recognize me and wanting to take photos. Everybody's super polite and super nice, but man, they are not messing around. I keep calling it being fake famous, and everyone's like, why are you calling it fake famous? I mean, you were on this show. These people saw you. But
they're real people.
Well, yeah, they're real people. But to me, if you can hop on a plane and suddenly that ends, if you could travel geographically and that ends, then it's fake fame, right?
But that's true of a lot of American celebrities. You know, you're big here, and then you go over to Europe in English speaking countries. If you go to Australia, for example, mm-hmm. you know, and people don't know who you are.
That's a way good point.
But Brian, so you went over there. Was it 1 year ago or 2 years ago?
A year and a half ago, because it was at the very, very end of 2010. So it's been about a year and a half.
Okay, so you go over there, you do a big thing, and again, it does a gigantic number. And then you come back. Were you expecting, like, what was your expectation in terms of people recognizing you versus how it turned out?
You know, I didn't have any idea what to expect. And it was so fast. Once we landed, we kind of got the first night off to get situated because you have major jet lag if you've ever flown out to, and I'm sure as Andrew knows. Speaking of which, I did an interview. I gotta give a heads up. Let me get the details on all this straight. But I did an interview for one of the newspapers, and it turns out that the person interviewing me from the newspaper was at first I thought it was a case where, because I knew his dad and performed for his dad in Grand Island, Nebraska, and I thought that his dad had just forwarded along, hey, there's this guy Brian Brushwood, you should meet him. And I understand, you know, you do sports reporting for this Indonesian newspaper, and so I come on out and. We start talking, and at some point he mentions the amazing meeting, and I'm like, oh, so you're hip to like the skeptic community. He's like, oh no, I think it's great. I went out that one time. I went out last year. It was amazing. And I was like, all right, cool. And he was asking me about how Indonesian magic is different from other places. And I was like, well, culturally, they're very into, you know, this rock star image of the magician, and other countries, as I understand it, in China, they also love magic, but it's very rigid. It's like, this is how you do the linking rings, and you shall not, do it any other way. And he says, yeah, I heard on the Weird Things podcast, Andrew Main went to China, didn't he? And then I'm just like, what did you know about... You know about the Weird Thing? We got fans all over the world for this. It was absolutely amazing.
When we would do some of our iTricks live chat stuff, mm-hmm. like where people would hop in pre-Google Hangouts, we get a lot of Indonesians. And we get these kids who would hang out and, you know, maybe a lot of them speak English, but some of them don't, but they just want to participate. Very, very culturally open. I think that's something to do with the island thing or something, the exchange of ideas. But
right. Well, I think that's
always fun.
Regardless, I want to give a huge thanks to Nick Freeland of Grand Island in Nebraska, who is the guy who hired me. He was one of the first college shows I ever worked. And his son, Paul Freeland, who's the newspaper reporter working at Indonesia, about to wrap up and go up to, he's going to start a stint up in, I believe, Tokyo, Japan next. But he's a fan of the show, and I hope he hears this. And I want him to know that it was fantastic to discover that that the Weird Things podcast truly does have an international audience is fantastic.
So anything cool you saw on the streets there? Anything weird? Or give us something. Ping pong parlor.
Well, there are some things you expect, right? And this is what's fascinating to me as a Westerner, is the fusion of how within as little as 30 meters to one side, you can have abject poverty. They've got this river running through Jakarta that is just horrifically, unfixably. It's black death and trash running down this entire thing. And there's tenement housing where people have built, everything on 2x4s, you know, hanging out awkwardly over the water. And you see this poverty. There was a stray cat going around that was like, I mean, just messed up. It was oozing. They called it white blood, which, you know, pus coming out of the eyes and stuff. And then meanwhile, you can walk 30 meters in the other direction, and all of a sudden you are in a mall bigger than any mall I've seen in the United States, with 40-foot tall video screens where they're shooting concerts and television specials, and they have Western themed restaurants that that have Guinness and pizza and beer and then you could go to another part of the mall where you have I don't know what the delicacy was called, but essentially, like, they deep fry a fish all at once, the entire thing, scales and all. And you just sort of pluck it open and start digging in. And they'll even eat the spines on the and I tried it. It tasted fine because it's so deep fried. You could take the spines on the fins and just break them off, and they're like French fries. They just chew.
You're a Texan too.
So. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, take that for what it's worth. It was unreal. At one point at this mall, I turned the corner and they're having a dog show with what must have been 40 or 50 Yorkshire Terriers going around, and they were all immaculately, pristinely groomed. It was utterly delightful to see everything, and it was utterly delightful to see, if you've ever watched Scam School, you know, friend of the show Dennis Rogers out there, he did a stunt where he kept two planes from taking off, and he hooked his arms into two loops, and just by with his own strength holding them back, the two military airplanes were not able to take off in either direction. It was one of the most amazing experiences. And I want to also give a shout out to a friend of the Weird Things podcast, Bill Meeks, for joining us to document the whole thing so that we could take these and make them into episodes over on Scam School.
Cool. Very cool.
And so when do you think that we will see the Scam School episodes coming out for people who are interested?
We did some nutty shows on Scam School this last time. This week we're running the Shark Week episode, which now that Scam School is on the Discovery Network, it's important that we time that up. Next week after that, we learned some pro wrestling moves. I'm going to suppose it's probably the week after that, or they may want to push it back a bit. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, that is pretty awesome, man. That is some very, very cool stuff.
It was exquisite. And to come back from that, back to America, and immediately come rushing back and, hop on the Twit live streams and do, you know, NSFW and Framerate and This Week in Tech all in studio, there's a little bit of a culture shock, but it was a blast. I'd be happy to do it again.
Well, I'll tell you what. We can move along with this episode after Brian's talk about Indonesia. But I'm glad that you brought up Paul Freeland, because before you had left Indonesia,
yes,
I got an email from Paul Freeland.
Shut up.
Who asked if he could sponsor this entire podcast.
Shut up. Did you know this in advance and I just randomly brought this up?
So allow me to thank Paul Freeland, who writes, thanks to Brian for stopping in to chat while he was in Jakarta.
You already knew this!
It was a pleasure to finally meet him after missing his first visit to Indonesia and several stops in the U.S. So there we go. Paul Freeland bought all three spots. I'm going to go check through them and make sure that they all don't say different things. But thank you very much for Paul for buying out the entire episode. Thank you for supporting the Weird Things podcast. If you would like to completely shock Brian Brushwood by meeting him and then, you know, timely mentioning that you sponsored the podcast right after he mentions your name, then you can go ahead on over to weirdthings.com/sponsor. I do want to note there were some people who bought episodes or bought sponsored spots before Paul. However, when you buy the full episode,
precedence.
You can get automatic line cutting privileges.
Yeah, and let me say, knowing that Paul will definitely hear this now since he sponsored the damn episode, let me say that it was utterly magical for me personally to go into a meeting thinking in terms of, okay, here's a guy I know whose son is in journalism, and I'm going to give an interview for him. And then slowly realize that oh wait, first we're on the same page as far as, you know, skepticism, and then to realize, oh wait, you actually know the shows, and like you're and then finally figure out that he's a fan. It was exquisite, and this is the final layer. This is the icing on the cake. Thank you very much, Paul.
Awesome. Well, gentlemen, rest easy. They caught it.
This is that moment where we all stand up and start cheering.
17 feet long and 7 inches. Its belly bursting with 87 eggs, a monster Burmese python was captured in the Everglades, breaking the state record.
How long?
17 feet, 7 inches.
And this is, it sounded like you said Everglades, but I'm sure you meant South America. There's no Everglades in the South America.
This is a Burmese python.
Yeah, because it's in Burma. This is in
Burma, South America.
Burma,
yes.
Yeah, sure. Burma, West Indies, right?
So, about a foot across, found in the Everglades. It's more interesting. About a foot across, okay? Now, I know I heard you use the term meters, which, you know, you're an international citizen now. this thing was 17 feet across, a foot across. Quote, this thing could eat anything it wants. But what's really interesting is how they caught this.
What did they catch it, like halfway through eating a grandmother?
Well, real quick, let me just give people context for those of you who aren't familiar with what the Everglades relationship is to Florida. Basically, from about certainly within walking distance of, let's say, Andrew's house, you know, and it is maybe a 8-minute drive from where Andrew's is located and where I was raised and grew up in South Florida, you hit the Everglades. That Everglades, it's about a half-hour drive across the state if you go from, you know, the Atlantic side to the Gulf side, and that pretty much goes the entire length. It's just big marsh and wetland that goes in between basically like where your Daytonas and Fort Lauderdales, your Atlantic coast cities, and your Tampa Bays and Clearwaters and, you know, all the western Florida cities. But it is all just marshland, shockingly close to where everybody lives.
Okay. So we have an invasive species problem here, and we've got for the Burmese pythons are one of the things we found, and these things will go mano-a-mano with alligators and eat them. They found feathers inside us, but it had 87 eggs in its stomach. When a Burmese python gives birth, you got these things pop out. They're 18 inches long already.
Wow.
And this thing was pretty close to giving birth to 87 little Burmese pythons.
Oh, my good Lord.
I mean, are we happy that it didn't? I mean, part of me is just like, let's make the world a little bit crazier. Let's have our own magical, dangerous place in our own backyard.
I live in Florida.
No.
I was going to say, yeah, change that to the central Austin Everglades.
It's not so exciting that way.
So here's where it gets kind of crazy. So I'm reading this. You start reading like, great, scary python, fantastic. And then I find out how they decide when they decided to pull it in. See, they followed the radio transmitter it had on it.
Wait a minute. They had tagged it and released it?
They'd tagged it. And then after a month or so, they decided to capture this thing. And they euthanized it using like some sort of snake gas. Now, you guys feel like, why did they tag this thing?
Was it 17 feet when they released it? Do we know? Did it get crazy big?
Yeah. It's already, like, big. Do you know why they tagged it?
Why?
Snake narc.
Wait a minute. You got 21 jump snake?
It's the snake wire. They put a wire on the snake so they could track it and see when it was hooking up with other snakes.
Oh, they just tracked them down.
And so they got it got knocked up. They were listening to the snake booty rattling.
something like that. And so they called it the Judas snake. So they used it to locate other ones. And so they'd follow this thing around. They'd see where it was hanging out. They'd go find those other snakes. Like, freeze!
Snake so police! This is like this like is, you know, the Everglades are the bathhouse of the 2010s for many, 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 many invasive snakes.
You guys are going to have to give me a moment. I need to go outfit both of my daughters with radio transmitters. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to jump out. Freeze! Start back!
So they didn't know, really. They didn't have a whole lot of records for how many eggs a female has inside of them. And then, so apparently they figured out, they caught it. They figured out the time and said, all right, let's use this. Let's use this snake. Let's put a wire on it, catch other snakes, and then let's go pull it back in once before it hatches. 87 eggs. 87 future 17-footers.
I got to tell you, this, and I know this makes no – it's an invasive species, and I understand we don't want Burmese pythons all over our Everglades, but I just think, like, man, world would get a lot more interesting if 87 more Burmese pythons just exploded on
these
the scene.
These aren't just – I mean, like, if you keep having these snakes mate, then they just start slithering onto Alligator Alley and then start hitching rides into Davie, Florida, and
yes.
eating at Las Patas. Like,
yes,
this
yes.
thing is a problem.
No, it's awesome. It's I want mate snakes. Come on, man. I want adult snake finder, which is probably an actual site somewhere.
apparently, the snakes aren't having a problem finding each other and hooking up.
No, no.
How do they do that?
You know, if the underbrush is a rockin', don't come a knockin'.
So I was thinking about, before I found out about this, I was thinking about, I wanted to do kind of a Jaws-like story involving giant snakes out there in the Everglades. I was thinking I needed a premise, and then this just fell right in front of me.
I'll tell you what, like, so is there any kind of controversy now, like, in how they were handling this, or are people just like it's insane that things this big are living this close to us?
Well, It's a big issue here, and I think that it shows that they're actively trying to do something about it other than just randomly find the snakes. I was talking to our buddy Chris Brennan, who's his dad pulled one of the record-sized snakes out of a house in Florida, like a 20-footer, years ago. And I was hypothesizing, I said, what if we got snake musk or something and find out when they hook up or whatever? And then a week later, this thing comes out. And, you know, so it's just like, well, yeah, that's an obvious idea. But there's actually, like, you know, the wire, but with snakes.
So are they like, this snake is not pregnant. So let's let it go. Let's keep it on transmitter. And then let's just get it before the snake pregnancy cycle, like, could end. So we
suddenly have, like, a time limit where they're all like, well, okay, if you look at the GPS data, it made it here and it went under this tree, and then it just sort of shook around for 20 minutes. And now it's like, we got like, what, 3 months, and we got to find this thing and capture it before it gives babies.
Probably exactly what happens. They use the shook around. They're too polite to say what.
Yes. They're all, look at that GPS signal tremor. What?
A foot wide. Quote, it could eat anything it wants.
Take a look at your lovely children.
Crazy to think when we think of, like, oh, man, like, James Cameron's going down to the bottom of the ocean. Like, what the hell is down there? Like, that this stuff is in the, like, I don't think.
I can see it from here.
Yeah, I don't think that people really understand how easy it is and how often people interact with the Everglades in South Florida. Like, it is a daily way of life. I have friends, including my friend Anthony Caruso, who turns 30 today, is an avid kayaker, goes out into the Everglades at least once a week. And there are 17-foot snakes looking to eat his face.
Are you saying that you're tired of these MF and snakes in this MF and Everglades?
I mean, there's nothing we can do, right? Except for find them right after they bang and kill them. And then try to scout out where they bang and kill the people that come for the bang sound.
Seems legit, man. It's the only way to be sure. Nuke it from space.
So, a man in Nebraska is a little bit upset about his apartment.
A man in Nebraska?
Yeah, in Nebraska, a little upset.
It's not Grand Island, Nebraska, home of Nick Freeland, Paul Freeland's dad.
Well, I'll tell you what, I do also want to remind people, Paul Freeland did send three messages, and the second of the three messages says, thanks to Justin for his pep talk on Twitter. Justin will add parenthetically, he does not remember giving Paul a pep talk on Twitter. However, I'm very glad that he enjoyed it. To paraphrase one of my favorite Western philosophers, Charles Barkley, I'm not leaving the newspaper industry. The newspaper industry is leaving me. So I guess I talked to him from one ex-newspaper writer to a current newspaper writer and gave him some kind of disparaging advice about the industry. But I'm glad he got some worth
out of
it.
There's that moment when Paul Freeland comes up and he's just like, it really meant a lot to me that night. And you're like, hey, listen, bro, I give a lot of advice to a lot of dudes. I mean, you're great and all, but I mean, it's probably nothing I ain't never said before to someone else louder is all I'm saying.
So man in Nebraska.
Apparently his apartment, and I got it. I chose this one because I love this wonderful writing. He's got a problem with catching brown recluse spiders.
That terrifies me.
Okay. They're dangerously venomous. They're not aggressive, but their bites can be painful. Fatal bites are rare, but they happen. It's an exterminator went to his apartment 6 times. This is my favorite quote. An exterminator visited his apartment 6 times, but the spiders are reclusive and managed to hide in deeper walls. Why can't you find these recluse spiders?
Well, they're highly reclusive. They're not always out in our
and
face.
And the brown paint.
Yeah. No, it's just tough. I mean, they're small.
Also, the drapes are brown. We're a big fan of Charlie Brown, the character.
So, Bauman said the brown recluse spiders are pitiful climbers. If they try to scale a wall, they'll reach about 4 feet and fall. His bed has metal legs that prove insurmountable to these spiders. His bed is the only safe sanctuary in his apartment. Yeah, that's what he tells the girls.
Yes. Oh, man. Imagine that, though. Imagine just like on your bed, and then like all you can hear is just like at night, just like the like just like that little disturbance in the air around you that you know is some kind of creature.
8 eyes watching you.
Well, so what's the story with this? He just has an infested apartment and can't get rid of them all, or
he's had the exterminator there 6 times, Brian, 6 times, and they keep coming back because they're reclusive.
I mean, have they bug bombed the entire? This is hard for me to believe. And by the way, while I was in Indonesia, Bonnie filled me in that we had like 3 more scorpion incidents. Apparently, we're just scorpio-tastic over here with scorpions.
When I come back, like when I travel, like I was away for a week, I come back and maybe I don't always make my bed, and I realize now why you want to make your bed. Nothing happened, but I walked into my room about to climb into bed. I was like, you know, red eye flight. And I look and I got this crumpled blanket sitting on my bed and I'm about to crawl. I'm like, you know, I've been away a week. Anything could climb inside of there and be waiting.
And was there anything?
A ghost.
I'll tell you what, though. There's something about scorpions and the punk rock way that they just move so slow. Like, I've never seen a bug have swagger until I saw a scorpion just being like, what's up, bro? I got this, I got one of these, you know, just like, which do you want? You want the claw or the stinger or the stare? Plus they also glow in the dark. Did you know that they fluoresce?
Yeah, you mentioned that before. That's pretty rad. I'd be like, oh, look at that plastic toy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, did I get that out of a cereal box?
Which would you rather face? Which would you rather run across in your room? A scorpion, we'll say a tarantula, a brown recluse, a black widow, or a 17-foot-long Burmese python?
Tarantula.
Yeah? You're not scared of tarantulas?
Well, tarantulas, I mean, they're generally not venomous. You can see them coming. And, you know, they can kind of be adorable in their own way.
I would be terrified of them. I don't want to. This is a very minor spoiler, but the opening scene of last night's Breaking Bad has a kid riding around on a dirt bike. And there's no context for this, so I'm seriously not ruining anything. But he's riding around on a dirt bike in the desert, and he sort of pulls up and sees a tarantula. And the first thing he does is he reaches his hand out and lets the tarantula crawl on him. And he does this thing where it's like it's running up his fingers a few times, and he throws it in a jar and goes. I understand the throwing it in a jar part, being a kid, you want to collect a spider. But just seeing a tarantula and you're out there in the wild and you're on your dirt bike and be like, first thing I want to do is stick out my hands and have it crawl over. That would never occur to me. Not in a million years.
Some people aren't total sissies, Brian.
Yeah, Brian.
Okay, is that you? Is that you? You're saying that guy?
Of course not.
You're saying I'm Mr. Handy Tarantula?
Yeah, they're like, yeah, I don't know. They're big and they're scary, but we've not found one that's deadly to people.
Hmm. And that's what I figured. I figured the kids, like, you know, I was like,
except,
well, I guess
for Shelob or whatever from Lord of the Rings. That's different.
Right. Well, and also, you know, if there's a bunch of them and they're out to kill humanity, like Kingdom of the Spiders.
Or in Hogwarts. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess there is that too.
Other than that. So that's because, like, that's what I think when I think of a trend, because they're kind of hairy. They're kind of like the monkey spider, you know? Like, oh, look.
Although, hopefully, it's not like the Vegas monkey spider where they rip out of their, or chimpanzee, like they rip out of their cages and go rampage.
Okay, how about that? Let's add that one to the mix. Which would you rather run across? Take out tarantula. Now it's brown recluse. Let's say 30 brown recluses, 30 black widows, a 17-foot long Burmese python, or a single adult chimpanzee.
Which male or female?
You can't tell.
I've been reading the John Calvert book. John Calvert, for those of you who know, was a magician, was an actor, kind of this, kind of like the guy that every one of us wanted to grow up to be. Traveled around the world on this yacht, beautiful women, all this.
He's actually the world's most interesting man in the world.
Pretty much.
He's actually
the real life guy.
John Calvert.
And so, in his book, he talks about like a couple different times in which he's had chimpanzees. And he adopted one. And by the way, John Calvert is 100 years old. His birthday, which
is that an exaggeration?
Last week, that he's 100.
That wasn't a joke?
What?
That, you said he's 100 years old. Is that right?
100 years old.
Yeah, he was just 100 a week ago.
What?
Or no, he should be.
It says here, born August 5th, 1911.
Now. Yeah. Is he still with us?
Is he still alive?
He's not dead.
This guy's a pimp. Are you kidding me? This is the real work. Through the Depression years into his 1940s, he continually increased the size of his magic show, adding illusions and personnel. From the mid-1940s to 1950s, he performed in 40 films, including starring roles in 3 film classic releases.
He wanted to make a movie about wild elephants in Africa. So what did he do? First, he went to Africa and shot himself a wild elephant.
Well, that's always the first step. I want to make a movie.
Method actor. John Calvert.
I want to make a movie about West Philadelphia prostitutes. So what's the first thing I do?
Shoot a West Philadelphia prostitute.
Exactly.
So this guy, an amazing life, but anyhow, so there was a story about how, like, the second chimpanzee he adopted would get loose, and, like, he'd get a call from, like, Jack Webb from, like, Dragnet, lived up the street. Just so you know, we have a visitor at our birthday party here. He's more than welcome to stay. And the chimp would be going out to parties, drinking out of people's glasses, and just having a time.
Well, chimps are apparently pretty docile and likable until they hit their teenage years, right? And
then this was like a 3-year-old chimp. But yeah, exactly.
But then they get into, like, you know, wanting to eat fingers and faces. Like, that's...
genitals.
But pre-bath salts, if the fastest way to end up with a missing face was to own a chimp.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. When they're young, they're adorable. But once they hit, you know, once, like many teenagers... teenagers with superhuman strength.
Yeah, and just to clue people in on the story that we came in to this topic with, in Las Vegas, there were 2 chimps, one of which ripped open the gates or the cage that he was being kept in that was not exactly built to standards. Both of the chimps escaped. One of them was shot by a responding officer after he made an aggressive move towards some of the residents. The other one was tranquilized because it was being not as aggressive. It was just kind of like screwing around with a garden hose, and it got a tranq dart in it. It then went to another facility, which it escaped from this weekend. Wait, caught it again.
That just happened?
The same animal control. Yes. The same animal control guy darted the chimp yet again, and now it's brought to Dirk Arthur's house. Dirk Arthur is an animal act magician in Las Vegas, who has on his property, standard monkey cage. So that's where he's being kept.
Yeah, apparently the people that were looking after the chimps, they came into it because they found them They were volunteer caretakers, I guess, and they were adamant, you know, chimps should not be kept as pets. They had stepped in to try to take care of the chimps. The two got out. The male got aggressive and was shot. And they're like, they're totally sympathetic to animal control. This one, the female, they say they think somebody may have let it out.
Yeah, there was damage to the gate, and they said that they was hours away from a welder coming to fix the damage when the chimp got out and started monkeying around, for lack of a better word. Apparently it was very, very scared when it saw the same animal control guy, that the animal control guy says that he thinks that the chimp recognized him from the last time. And eventually what's going to happen is they are going to bring the chimp named CJ, I believe, short for Calamity Jane, to a reserve in Oregon, in Bend, Oregon,
where you can actually donate. Actually, it's a commune with a bunch of hippies.
Well, all right. Well, so back to the original question, which is, which would you rather face? And I'm going to amend it a little bit more, because clearly you guys are not terrified of brown recluses or black widows, right? Neither of those scare you at all?
I guess I don't know.
They scare me.
Yeah. I don't know spiders enough that recognizing one or the other would be like, I could recognize a tarantula, but like beyond that, it would just be like an odd colored spider. I'd try to hit it with a shoe. So no matter what it was.
You walk into a room, the door closes, and you discover it locks behind you. And your choices are 4 rattlesnakes, 1 17-foot-long Burmese python, 1 chimpanzee. Which of those 3 rooms would you take?
How old's a chimp? Adult chimp?
We'll say it's an adult chimp.
And adult chimp is right out for me.
Oh, yeah, chimp is the first one out is chimp.
Yeah, so no matter what, you feel like there's nothing you could do to evade. You feel like even if you just huddle in the corner, looking down and not giving him the time of day.
Close my ears.
You feel like
it will rip me apart like I was a Mr. Potato Head doll.
What if you knew,
What
if you knew karate? Is there a single case of somebody who knows karate taking on a chimp?
No.
You're the best around. No one will steal your banana because you pound him in the ground.
There's a case of somebody teaching a chimp karate.
What? Is that
karate chimp?
Wait, there's such a thing as karate chimp?
We talked about it here, yeah. And it's like, what more do we need to do? They're already like the most vicious pound-for-pound killer there is. Now let's teach it karate.
Can I Google? I'm going to Google karate chimp. All right, hold on. I'm going karate chimp right now. Wow, there are 25 videos right now. Can I take a look? Charlie the Karate Chimp. Here we go. This is a video.
No way I could make a 16-year-old chimp perform karate if he didn't want to do it. He just likes it. He just puts on that gi and his belt, and he's all set to go.
Holy crap, what? He's doing karate.
Good kid. Hey, Karate Chimp, what do you expect?
This is awesome.
A lot of his karate moves, especially his jump spinning heel kick, he could actually throw it better than any human.
This is the...
So we're watching this.
This is an extraordinarily
like
well executed spinning heel kick.
Kicking it is. Just type in Karate Chimp into YouTube and you'll see.
This may be the greatest thing I've ever seen.
It's terrifying, Brian. It's like sharks with laser beams.
Well, but still, look, he put him in a hold and he's doing like crazy kung fu movies.
Yeah,
breaking
that chimp
boards.
Will never get mugged.
Okay, so the chimp's out. Like, that's last place, no matter what. 4 rattlesnakes. Now, here's the thing. You got multiple bogeys, right? And you can die of a rattlesnake bite. You know, you got to worry about anti-venom. Would you rather take on 4 rattlesnakes or a single 17-foot Burmese python?
I'm going to go ahead with the 4 rattlesnakes. I can step on 4 rattlesnakes and kill them easier than I could 1 17-foot Burmese python.
Multiple bogeys, though. See, that python only has one way to take you out, and that's it's got to grab it and wrap you and squeeze you till you die, whereas multiple bogeys... You're looking at 3 of them. Fourth one sneaks up.
You stomp the first one. The other one goes.
Yeah.
Bare hands. Do you think you could tear apart a foot across 17-foot Burmese python?
No, but it's temperament. I think it's less likely. you know, when those snakes corner you, if they decide you move around, if they decide, hey, I don't like this guy, the snake's going to be kind of like a little bit wary, maybe keep its distance, but you'll know it coming. I'm not going to sleep in that room.
I mean, okay, look, that's four.
Well, this is Thunderdome, right? Like, this is two, one creature, one man enters, and one creature or one man leaves, right?
Well, we didn't elaborate. We just said you go in a room and this is what's in there. Which would you rather find?
Okay, yeah, no, if you're taken out 15 minutes later, it's like, well, thank you for coming to Terror World.
But you don't know. But you don't. To Terror World? That would be a great theme park. That's how Halloween Horror Nights, Universal Orlando, you want to up your game? Welcome to Terror World with Brian, Justin, and Andrew Main, where we're going to set up multiple rooms where you'll just open up and you have no idea how long you're going to be in the room with this thing.
By the way, Terror World is located offshore international waters, so you've got to sign this waiver.
I'll tell you, we've talked a lot about building our own Jurassic Park. I feel like Terror World could happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, we could set up Terror, and at least we could just go Terror Barge. Maybe we start with Terror Barge.
I think I'm living in Terror World. So, I'm going to be honest.
The subtitle, of course, has to be The Thrill of a Lifetime, right? I mean, that's it, because your life, the thrill of a lifetime, maybe your last. Exactly. Right?
The tagline is, hope you don't get the chimp.
What are you going for?
Oh my God. I think I'm going for the python, because I understand intellectually that if it gets a grip on me, it can squeeze me and eat me and be all over. But it's one beast that I feel like I have a chance at outmaneuvering, right? Because snakes aren't super good. It's not like it's going to launch itself across the room in some kind of like ninja attack and then bear hug me to death. Whereas I do feel like that can happen with the chimp, and I do feel like that could happen with the four rattlesnakes.
So we put all of them in a room together. Who walks out?
Chimp.
No, chimp. No. The Burmese python.
Oh, day.
What? The chimp. The chimp, number one, all of them in the room together. The chimp definitely gets bit. The snakes, none of the snakes are going to bite another snake. You're not going to have a rattlesnake biting a Burmese python. They're going to ignore each other. The rattlesnakes,
sure?
Yes.
What would the snakes don't? Do they have a detente? Do they have like some sort of agreement?
It's snake club, bro. The first rule of snake club is you don't bite another
snake. What about a king snake? It eats other snakes.
Not up here in this guy's mind. It doesn't.
That's not a Terror World.
Exactly.
What I imagine.
Like, Andrew, what you don't understand is that Brian hasn't thought of that. So you just need to allow for this point.
What I would imagine is that one of the rattlesnakes, just one of them has to tag that chimp. And then that chimp is not so feisty. He's just going to kind of hole up and be like, maybe he kills three of those snakes.
This chimp karate chop. Brian's doing the karate chop motion, by the way.
Well, because it's karate chimp, right? He's trying to use his kung fu against the rattlesnakes. But then he's slowed down, and then the python just rolls over, lazily wraps him, and then gobbles him up. And then, like, I think that's the end of it. I can't imagine the python even taking on the rattlesnake.
I think of King Kong, the original, where King Kong took on a snake.
Yeah? Who won?
Yes. As we now move to documentary evidence.
Chimpanzee and Burmese python, playmate friends.
Well, all right. Here's my worry about the Burmese python from my perspective is that I don't know how tough a Burmese python's skin is. Because I'm looking at, like, can I kill this thing, right?
The only way you're going to kill it is by getting its head. You're going to have to gouge its eyes out and stick your finger in its brain.
But, like, I also can't just rip Andrew's arm off. A chimp can rip Andrew's arm off, you know?
Like, I bruise easily. You might be able to.
So I feel like a chimp could, like, tear. He could, like, tear a Burmese python apart with his crazy chimp strength.
I mean, but grabbing what? I mean, I'm going to say no way, because a Burmese python definitely eats prey the size of a chimp. Let's just boil it down, because that's the real question.
Can a Burmese python eat a chimp?
Yes.
I guess that's the question.
Yes, it really is.
They might eat things bigger, but I don't know if they eat things more agile. I don't think if they eat things with that mixture of agility and strength.
What's he going to do? Because here's the problem.
Check stat sheet, bro. We rolled for this.
It's
during the first day when we were making the campaign.
Man, I love.
Check agility plus strength and charisma.
I love Dungeons and Predators. It's my favorite role-playing game. But the, okay, here's the problem is that if a chimp comes up, and let's say it's got fangs and it just reaches down and just bites gar right in the middle of the Burmese python. Burmese python, all he does is like a steel trap go, and then that's it. Squeezing your
out. How fast does it move?
Fast enough, bro. Fast enough for you, old man.
No, because like I think the problem is like you could try to screw with a python and then you kind of get tired. And then it's like, oh, okay, are you done punching me, sissy girl?
No.
And then you're done. But it's like a slower thing.
It's not that slow, man. It's not. I ought
so
to find.
So it's slower than. But how slow do you think it? Like a.
I'm going to go to YouTube. I'm going to type in Python kills.
Deedle, I think it's spelled D-E-D-L-E.
There you go. Here's a wild caught carpet python killing a rat. This is poorly reviewed, though. So I don't think he squeezes it here. Actually,
it really falls apart in the third act.
Wait a minute.
There's a great premise.
This is Python killing a python. Take a look at this after this advertisement goes away. But I wouldn't have thought a python would kill a python. That doesn't seem right.
Skip the ad. Maybe he's killing Eric Idle of Monty Python.
All right, here we go. Take a look at this. This is wildlife stock footage available on... on YouTube, we're looking at. This is, look at that. They're just hugging each other. It's like
Two snakes, of course, because this is an audio podcast.
Yes.
Two snakes that are entwined.
This is the sound.
Around each other in.
Two snakes hugging.
Look up chimpanzee and Burmese python on YouTube.
Chimpanzee.
Also, Brian, if you can remember, can you copy these URLs so we can put them in the thing?
Sure. Okay, which of these do I want to click on?
Do you see chimpanzee and Burmese python? It should say chimpanzee and Burmese python.
Well, that's what I type in, chimpanzee, Burmese python.
And let me see what you wrote again. And type in, go up again.
Yep.
And put and Burmese. Try with and, see if that helps.
There you go. And Burmese python. This is, by the way, this is good science that we're doing right now. Chimpanzee.
Third one down. Click on that.
This is what happens when you put a chimpanzee and a Burmese python.
I'm telling you, all right? So he's got this chimp, by the way. He's wearing his red Mickey Mouse pants. It's to the boa here. Could be python, whatever. It's a snake. Okay. The chimp is just rocking it. He's just rolling around with it, playing with it like a garden hose. Fearless.
This is adorable.
Now look at that, Brian. You tell me that the chimp isn't in control here?
But that's not a 17-inch Burmese python or 17-foot.
What? It's maybe 7-foot or something. Do you think that's going to stop that chimp? That chimp's like, it's a bit. Oh, look, that's longer than I realized.
It's not hungry, though. Boy, that chimp, man, he loves him some.
Just look, he doesn't even care, man. He's picking that thing up like it was summertime in the yard and he's about to plug in the
slip and slide. Like he's a toddler who doesn't understand what a Burmese python could do to him.
He knows. He's top animal, man. I'm afraid of a chimp. We're all afraid of chimps. I think the chimp is the apex predator.
Look at that chimp. You're afraid of that chimp? The chimp wants to give you a hug.
That chimp will end your life, Brian.
Yeah.
That chimp's a stone cold killer. And if you don't think so, then that's ridiculous.
There's a baboon in the background, too.
Then just wait until the next time you test drive.
Can I point out that you guys are the psychotics who went to, like, Monkey Land in the Florida?
Monkey Jungle, which is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is that okay, but you're afraid of this guy? Is it just a size thing?
Well, yeah.
No, I mean, like, they're awesome. Like, but lions and tigers are awesome. Wild pack dogs are awesome to look at. You don't want to be put in a room with one if it's you or them.
All right.
And, I mean, spider monkeys and squirrel monkeys are a world apart from chimpanzees.
Man.
I mean, in volume, we had probably, 90 pounds of monkeys on us.
Yeah.
You had 90 pounds guys, of trying to steal food. Monkeys. Holy cow.
No, it was pretty legit. It was fairly amazing.
It's pretty awesome.
All right. Well, I do want to end our trilogy of Paul Freeland ads. Of course, he met Brian in Indonesia, wanted to let him know how much he had a good time. He got some career advice, shockingly enough, from me to his own detriment or possible benefit. I'll leave it open. And then he gives us one final note here. I've not had the pleasure of Andrew's company, but I'm sure he's a fine gentleman and a snappy dresser.
Yeah, that is true. I can vouch for both of
those. I can, in fact, confirm. So thank you again, Paul Vreeland. He sponsored the entire episode, bought all three spots. If you've bought a spot and you are waiting, you will be on the next episode. Thank you for being patient. But we did want to, especially since Brian had mentioned Paul at the beginning of the episode, we wanted to get all three of his spots in there. So thank you very much, Paul Vreeland. WeirdThings.com/sponsor if you would like your message on the podcast for only $30.
Thank you, Paul. That was very, very generous of you to do that.
Yeah.
So, you guys want to talk about, I don't know, movie or something?
If only there was a movie that was of interest to all of us that maybe came out 2 weeks ago that all of us saw or most of us saw and then one of us didn't see and we were like, we'll talk about it next time we're together. But then one of us just didn't show up for 2 whole weeks, even though the other guy went on the other side of the world and was able to come back and still made his obligations to the podcast. Yeah, that sounds great.
Well, one guy happened to be on an airplane every time we did the podcast. And he said, bring other people on board because he was cool with that.
Oh, no. Let's talk about The Dark Knight Rises.
Which does kind of seem like a world away. Like, from when it came out, like, of course, you had the big tragedy in Colorado. We've had so much time. People have talked about it a lot. It does kind of seem a long way away. But I will say this, that the farther I've gotten away from the movie, the more I've liked it and the more I think about it, the more I liked it. I enjoyed the movie walking out. I think it is. I mean, Christopher Nolan to me is, you know, the best in the biz. If there's one director that, I mean, I have directors that I love, like Quentin Tarantino, that I will always go see his movies. But I think the guy who's doing the best, most ambitious work right now is Christopher Nolan. And I don't think we've seen a talent like him operating in that kind of arena for, you know, doing thought-provoking, interesting stuff for mainstream audience since Spielberg, in my opinion.
Can I ask you real quick, and this will kind of set the stage for where we're at now as we delve into the movie. Last night, you called me with a hypothetical scenario where I had to pick
yes.
A or B. Was that related to any news story, or where did that come from?
That was just a straight question that I had.
Which, okay.
All right. Here, now... We are going to say...
spoiler alert. We're going to spoils.
Yep.
Spoilers herein.
Batman is Bruce Wayne.
3, 2, 1. All right. We're into spoiler territory. When I asked Brian last night, and I will ask you, Andrew, there's 2 movie announcements in the next 5 minutes. Tell me which one you are most excited for.
Like, and a genie shows up and be like, there are 2 projects coming. You are only able to see one of them.
I'm not still going, holy crap, a genie.
No, yes. The genie looks shockingly like Justin Robert Young.
I mean, does he look kind of Middle Eastern?
Why do we need
afraid?
A genie?
No, this guy pops out of nowhere holding a device.
Because,
I'm like, whoa.
Because in real life, you would be able to see both projects. But in this case, you have to choose one, right? So it's like you only one or the other.
All right.
By the way, for those of you listening, you have to understand this is the nature of our relationship, is calling each other up with stupid questions. And like, I called Brian up last week because like, you got to see The Hunter because I got to discuss The Hunter because I don't know how I feel about the ending, you know, and that was
great,
just the message I left.
What's great is we'll spend like the phone will ring. You're like, hello. And it's like, all right, look, so here's what's happening. Right. And you set up the choice. You spend 3 minutes setting up the choice and then they give an answer. And then whatever the answer is, the other person just blows up and criticizes that person for the next 30 minutes about how they're high as a kite.
All right. So here's the scenario. Either a Hawkeye film written and directed by Joss Whedon. So he has complete creative control, writing and directing. And then let's even, just to sweeten the deal, add the female lead is the most exciting female lead you could possibly put in the Hawkeye movie.
Wait, right? So in other words, Scarlett Johansson as the Black Widow.
You could. Add right. Scarlett and then another somebody who you'd be like, oh my God, that would be great, right? Or a continuation of the, as we find out, Robin Blake character as he takes the reins of the Batman mantle, not written and not directed by Christopher Nolan,
but
produced by Christopher Nolan.
Which you can only see one of those two movies. Which one?
Who's the director?
Let's say
Zack Snyder,
or a Snyder equivalent. But he's somebody that Nolan signs off on.
That Nolan chose.
No, well, Nolan chose Zack Snyder.
Right. All you know is that it's put out by the Syncope Production Company.
Robin Blake.
Really?
Yep. That's what I'd say.
Yep. Not directed. Heartbeat. Huh. Now, is that just because you love the Batman world, or?
Well, all right, here. Real quick, Andrew, I'll sweeten the pot. Hawkeye's certainly a kind of the basement level of the Avengers. Let's go one up. We do another a Hulk movie that doesn't have all the, like, is the Hulk good or bad storyline, which is easily the weakest parts of both those previous Hulk movies, written and directed by Joss Whedon with Mark Ruffalo.
Here's the reason why I'm still going to go the Robin Blake, okay?
All right.
I like Whedon. I'm excited to see Whedon in the Marvel Universe, Whedon handling that. My interest in, and I'm a Marvel guy, just so you know, I bleed Marvel, okay? But Batman is kind of like a, you know, my one weakness. The reason is that intellectually, Batman is fascinating. Batman is very, very fascinating. There's a lot of different ways you can go into that story. There are a lot of different things that you can explore with that. I like the Avengers, but the Avengers was, you know, very well acted, good character moments with a monster of the week.
Yeah.
You know, where to me, the Batman stories gets a lot more into the psychology, the world building.
It's almost more about the villains than the hero itself.
Well, and even the environment, you know, Gotham has its own character. You know, Gotham has its own, you could follow that camera, could go down a street, and there's going to be something interesting going on, or there's something, you know, it's like The Wire. It's like a lot of things. It's Sherlock Holmes. It's just a bunch of these elements that come into play there. And what it does to people is fascinating to me.
Yeah. So I also think, and I asked Brett this initially, and his point was that it was kind of an unfair question because we are going to get way more into the Avengers universe. We know that. We're going to get so far into the Avengers, we're going to get at least 5 more movies in the Avengers universe,
like,
that we know of now.
At least $5 billion more dollars, studio dollars, into this universe.
Yeah, so it's like we will get more of that, and we will get more of Zack Snyder. We don't know. It would at this point be a reversal of what he has said for Nolan to have any involvement in a Batman story.
This is like a magical flight of fancy. The fact that like one thing is expected and believable, the other it's like it's like a genie granted a wish, and you're like, what? But there is more to the Batman story.
Right? And also, I mean, I don't know. Top for you. Imagine Rian Johnson directing.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt Batman story. I will buy my first 7 tickets right now. I will give them money for my first 7 tickets. And if they woke me up tomorrow and said, oh, by the way, all the transactions went through, but we accidentally oversold your tickets. You need to buy 14 more tickets. I would buy 14 more tickets.
Wow. All right.
Are you kidding?
There are some up and coming directors who I think are exciting. I think Rian Johnson, Duncan Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the latest thing Duncan Jones did?
After Last Source Code.
Okay, that's right. Source Code. I'll tell you what. I liked Source Code. Okay, it just felt small. It felt like a really, really well done single episode of The Twilight Zone to me, and it was kind of a bummer that it wasn't bigger, especially after Moon. But then again, keep in mind, Christopher Nolan, I loved Memento the way I loved Moon, And his second effort was Insomnia, right?
Well, which, I mean, technically Following was his first feature. So Memento was the second, but the third was Insomnia.
Right. Do you know what the budget was for Source Code, though?
Like, it was like, what, $20 in a taco?
The Source Code was a third, and look, pulled it up here, $32 million.
Wow.
And so it felt like an $80 million movie, you know? And so I would say that I hear what you're saying, absolutely what you're saying, but what he was able to do with that, you put him, give him $100 million, put him in a $150 million film franchise, I would be excited to see what he does. Because I think Duncan Jones is a guy that gets sci-fi, and now you say, okay, we know you get that. Now let's put you in a superhero universe. Could be interesting.
Absolutely. Well, and to be honest, we saw the same thing. In fact, that production budget is pretty close to what Serenity cost, you know, when Joss Whedon, of course, took the franchise of Firefly and made it into it was like $20 to $30 million movie production for Universal.
I mean, I will say this, and I liked Dark Knight Rises, and I liked Joseph Gordon-Levitt in the character that he played, but everything that happened in that movie is less interesting than what I imagine in my head of the possibilities of could happen after the final frame of that movie, where, you know, slowly the bat closet is coming out of the bat lake.
Sure.
But, you know,
I don't, have we seen any other big ticket movies that have played up that somebody inheriting the mantle of a superhero like that and trying to figure out how? I mean, I guess technically that's what a Green Lantern story is or whatever, but not one where we knew the previous person who was that character. I mean, I think that's what I would love the most about it, is see somebody try to grow into the role of being the next Batman.
And, you know, there are a lot of interesting Batman storylines of where he had other mentors of guys who were these sort of, you know, these sort of golden era kind of crime fighter type guys that he'd learn from. And I think, it could be, you know, it could be neat, because, you know, the disadvantage for Blake was he didn't get to go to ninja school.
Right.
Right. You know, and so he's got to start off in a different sort of place than, you know, and we don't know if he quite has the inexhaustible funds and Lucius Fox giving him toys and stuff. It could feel like the comic book Batman Year One was a really good, you know, was the idea of the first year of Batman. And you got bits, you know, that was the great thing about the series. The trilogy was, Nolan pulled some great elements, but you could do kind of a Year One trilogy unto itself of that first year of him trying to be the Batman.
The closest thing I can think of was, and I know Justin hates the storyline, but in the Iron Man franchise, when Tony Stark has lost alcoholism and he's a bum on the street, and James Rhodes takes on the armor, like, this is a guy, you know, Tony Stark, part of what makes Tony Stark Tony Stark is that he is smart enough to develop all this technology, and he knows the armor intimately from inside and out because he's the one who built it all, whereas James Rhodes is a more blue-collar individual who just sort of like, I don't know, I can fly and I'm strong now. And there's sort of this, uh-oh, wait a minute. Hold on, take a look at this.
That's the extent of his alcoholism. I am showing for the camera right now. I like Demon in the Bottle.
Wait, hold it up and put your face next to it.
I smell a new Twitter avatar right now.
Wait, do you have your Iron Man mask there?
Can you hold your Iron Man mask? Crap. This would be amazing.
Being cheated.
It's totally shocking how close that is. That part of it aside, the fact that he's able to take a shower and sweat for a while and suddenly he's not an alcoholic.
Laps in the pool. Him and Don Draper. The only way to cure alcoholism is by doing laps in the pool.
That's apparently the new in thing, right? But outside of that, there's this moment when Tony Stark decides to come back, when briefly there are two Iron Men, only one of them, you figure out really fast, doesn't know a damn thing about the armor that he's rocking, and he's ostensibly the real Iron Man. Whereas, you know, Tony Stark is kind of warming up. Like, at first, he insists on using only the original prototype, the old the kludgy refrigerator version, where it's almost like he wants the challenge. He's like, "No, you're Iron Man. I'm just sort of warming up to it again and going through the motions." I think this is a neat idea that I haven't seen in any of the major film recreations of these comic book properties.
Yeah, I hear you. And that'll be kind of cool to see. I love Don Cheadle, and I think we may actually get that in Iron Man. The you know, we'll see where Shane Black's going with Iron Man 3. Could be amazing. But I'm so. What was your answer to that, Bri? Which did you want?
I went with, and keep in mind, I'm skewed because I just watched The Avengers for a second time. And I don't know why I'm fascinated with which one I like more between The Avengers and The Dark Knight, because they're two very different movies. Mm-hmm. But there's some scientific part of my brain that keeps shouting like, no, in your heart, you have more love points for one than the other. You must figure out which love rises. And it wasn't until the flight back from Taipei, coming back from Indonesia, I rewatched The Avengers. And keep in mind, you know, there's a huge difference watching it at a movie theater for the first time versus watching it the second time on a, you know, a 6-inch LCD screen with, you know, crappy audio. You're really only hearing one channel on the side. But son of a bitch, is the writing awesome on The Avengers? Like, I found myself laughing involuntarily several times rewatching it, even knowing what was coming up, because there's little moments you forget or new things that you discover. It's like it's like every 30 seconds, and I told this to Justin, every 30 seconds you get a squirt of serotonin, and every 3 minutes you get a major battle. And whether that serotonin is because of a clever line, you know, that makes you laugh, or something that surprises you, or a minor scuffle, it's like the pacing is exquisite from beginning to end. The one thing I did notice about The Avengers second time through was it was a bigger pill to swallow, the whole superhero comic booky thing in the first act, the second time I watched it, after having watched The Dark Knight Rises. But outside of that, though, it was still amazing.
Well, it's funny you said, better, you know, that it is well written, and because I would say, and I think it's you're not wrong, but there is a distinction between, you know, dialogue and plot and story, and I would say that the dialogue and the scene by scene conflicts that come up through the Avengers are extraordinarily well written, which Whedon has always done. He's always been a great person of like the back and forth. Character to character, but I would say that Dark Knight Rises and the Dark Knight movies are exceptionally well written in terms of, you know, the plot and story and character development, because I continue to go back and look at things like, oh wait, like that was paralleling that, you know, or this character meant that. Or if you look at in Dark Knight Rises, the latest thing I've been kind of fascinated about and turning over in my head over and over again is there were stuff that leaked out from the Bane costume designer, who talked about, and it's, I don't, who knows whether or not we're going to ever see it, because Nolan doesn't never put deleted footage on his DVDs, but there was apparently a lot cut that showed Bane training in the similar manner to Bruce Wayne in Batman Begins. So he's doing the same on all the poles, standing up on all the poles while people are hitting him with the sticks. And so it's Tom Hardy going through those same things. So theoretically, the idea was to more specifically say that Bane isn't just somebody who comes out of the wild like the Joker did in Dark Knight. He is very much an equal to Bruce Wayne and is as driven and focused.
Yeah, he's like what Bruce Wayne was 10 years before the cartilage is gone.
Okay, now, if I can offer a counterpoint, and keep in mind this comes from somebody who liked the movie, but it's weird to me how much more I liked The Dark Knight Rises once I wasn't looking at it anymore. The actual experience of watching it, there's extended passages, there's extended moments in the first and second acts where I'm checking my watch and I'm just like, okay, what is it? Why am I looking at this? Now, granted, a lot of that came to mean something in the third act. And then looking back, and you see what they wanted to achieve in that third act, you're like, okay, I understood they had to set it up this way. And it was like taking bitter medicine. But, like, there was chunks of The Dark Knight Rises that just weren't fun. And I didn't like watching them. And it wasn't interesting for those moments. I was bored during moments of the movies. Now, having said all that, there were really cool things that happened. And those scenes were necessary to make them possible. Whereas there was never a moment like that during The Avengers, right?
See, there was for me. That's weird, because, like, The Avengers, I felt like we kept kind of jumping backwards so we could get, you know, like, three come-to-Jesus moments.
Mm-hmm.
And that was and they're very different movies. Like, with Dark Knight, like, in knowing how much I love Nolan, I'm, like, every scene I'm just into because I know he doesn't waste a frame. And with Avengers, I felt like, when I watch, you know, I know Marvel team-ups, we got to have the fight, you know, Iron Man and the Thor, and they meet. But I go, man, this was only there so we could have the fight. Nothing got established. It did nothing that didn't have had no bearing. A lot of that stuff that did had no bearing on the story, other than giving us these fan moments. So I guess that's from like a story point of view. I kind of kept going, well, if I cut this out, we'd still be in the same spot. Where at the Dark Knight, I go like, man, there's like I want to see the 4-hour version.
Really? Well, and that was the impression I got walking out of the Dark Knight. I thought there's no way this is the full movie. I feel like there's more here. Similar, almost similar to Prometheus, only not just a giant.
Well, you thought that, yeah, you felt that way about Two Amazing Spider-Man too, because you wanted more development with Doc Connors too.
That's, apparently, I want more of everything.
I mean, we live in a great time. I mean, that's when we get to argue which is better, you know, the Joss Whedon Avengers or the Christopher Nolan third Batman movie.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'll tell you what, and that was leaving the theater. We had these expectations and hopes that this summer would be a very important summer for comic book films, you know, and comic book movies. You had three big A titles coming out with competent directors behind them, and you kind of hoped that in this world where, you know, it's like, all right, trust guys who get the source material, who do their jobs well, and we'll go from there, that would pan out. And it has. For all three of them, they did, you know, a very, very good box office business. And hopefully that is the lesson for Hollywood going forward, is not last year's lesson of Green Lantern, of put somebody who doesn't care about the property behind it, but rather this year's, you know, which is the Joss Whedon's, Mark Webb's, and Christopher Nolan's of the world. Let's give them the reins and let them do what they do best. Because for me, it was, there were three films that to me, you know, go in the top 10, if not the top 5.
And keep in mind, you know, for anyone who's sitting back and just shouting like, you know, you spoiled brats, it's like we're very aware of how spoiled for choice we are. We are so thrilled that as children we were able to experience these stories. This is in every way the culmination of our wildest dreams of what we wanted for these franchises that were so beloved. But having said all that, this is where we are right now, and this is what we have to argue about. So argue we will.
And it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's amazing that we get that we get to do it. All right. Do we have any other thoughts on Dark Knight?
Are there any other picks that you guys want to mention before we wrap up? We're running long on this episode.
I'm gonna throw out there. It's on Netflix streaming. We've talked about it before. The Hunter, starring William Dafoe, and he's a hunter who goes after a Tasmanian tiger in Tasmania. Best place to look. And it's a different kind of movie. I mean, it's a character piece, and it's got some action beats to it. I enjoyed it. And then the ending, though, any of you guys seen it yet?
No. Do you want
to see this? It would be a good discussion, because I'm like, I don't think I get this. I think I kind of get what they're trying to say, but that's not really as consistent logically with what the overarching theme of the movie is. I could have missed something entirely. So
Sure. All right. What about you, Justin? You got something?
I'll tell you, I'm going to pick something that I actually watched with Brian. It might be a little bit outside the wheelhouse.
This was going to be my pick as well. Can we do a unified pick? Is that possible?
No, sure.
It's all the 30 for 30 documentaries, which ESPN did, are now up on Netflix. If you don't like sports, many of them are still amazing. They are super well done.
I'm that guy. I could care. Like, I'm that jerk who takes as a point of pride that I don't care about sports ball. Yet the storytelling, especially on Silly Little Game. I mean, we could talk about both of them. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, that's what I wanted to pick. Basically, Silly Little Game is about the group of five geeks that were obsessed with, well, one is super obsessed with numbers, who comes up with the idea of rotisserie league baseball, which eventually becomes fantasy baseball, which eventually becomes the $4 billion industry that is fantasy sports, and kind of just how these, basically it is this kind of triumph of the nerds sort of story. And not only is it a well-done documentary, but they also weave in what is basically the fiction biography of them acted out by actors, which is extremely well done.
They do it in the style of, if you've ever seen the drunk history shorts, where basically they get someone drunk and they start explaining what happened in history, and then they have people recreate it word for word coming from a drunk man. They nail that style hilariously. They come up with these little vignettes for every piece of the puzzle. I was trying to ignore it and instead was trying to read 100 Bullets Because they were watching it and I happened to be in the room and it got too caught up in it. It was too funny. And it was like there were serious laugh out loud cackle moments in there.
So check that out. It's on Netflix. It's called Silly Little Game. It's part of ESPN's 30 for 30 documentary series.
Yeah, that's my pick too.
Well, gentlemen, that's a wrap.
Wait, that's not back. That's not together. That's not how we end. This is how long it's been.
I know how it ended. Did I say it was over yet? Did I?
No.
Look at my face. Did I say that it was over yet?
As Andrew now flashes a picture of a screaming monkey,
which of course he has right next to his camera.
Of course, it's been weird.
Want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.